It seems almost quaint, in light of the level of polarization we're seeing now, to think of the summer of 2012 as polarized. And yet there was plenty of deep division on display as that year's presidential race escalated. Washington Post columnist E.J. Dion had just published Our Divided Political Heart and was with us on State of Belief Radio to discuss this important book.
I'm sure you hear, I know I do often, people who say, you all are just hung up on all this division stuff. It's always been that way in our nation, and it's no different today. Is it different today?
I do think it is. In other words, we have never been and don't want to be uniform. We've always had political conflicts. We've always had, except when George Washington was elected, contested elections. And we don't want to get rid of that. I think the issue is, how far apart are we, and are the ways in which we're talking about our problems getting in the way of solving them as opposed to helping us solve them? Mm-hmm. And I think right now we're in one of those moments where, you know, in my view, one side of the debate, a conservatism that I think has been radicalized from where it was before, really wants to end what I see as a long consensus that's dominated our politics for about 100 years, where both sides accepted that there was a fundamental role for government in a society that valued individual liberty and achievement. And conservatives may at times have been for a more restrictive view of government vis-a-vis the marketplace, but they broadly came to accept all of these programs, notably the New Deal programs, the Great Society programs, like food stamps and Medicare, and we argued within that consensus. I think right now, the right end of our politics is challenging that consensus and basically wants to blow it up and replace it with what I see as the politics of our Gilded Age, that period after the Civil War until probably you date it to Teddy Roosevelt becoming president in 1901. And so I think that's different. It's where we always argue, but this is an argument about much more fundamental things, and that's why I think it is so divisive. I like to think it's not quite as bad as the arguments we were having in the 1850s, which, as we know, ended in the Civil War. Right. But I don't think we've gone quite that far yet, and I certainly hope not.
What will it take for the warring factions in our society to see that it is ultimately in their own interest to find common ground?
Well, I think that's part of the problem, is right now it's not clear to either side that common ground exists. I think in general, people say we cannot have our budget so out of balance for the long run. I mean, I think in the short run, we still need to stimulate this economy because unemployment is too high. But for the long run, we need to be on a path where what we spend and what we take in are more closely in balance. I don't see any way that we can achieve that balance without raising taxes. Now, there are a lot of things we can argue about. We can argue about how much do we need to raise taxes. We can argue which taxes should we raise. We can argue about who should be taxed. But if the argument over balancing the budget becomes instead an argument over simply reducing the size of government, and that's the only option, then we're going to have a real problem coming together. I'd like to think after this election we might settle some of these questions, but at this point, I fear it's going to take us a bit to work our way through this very big argument.
Yeah. You make an interesting point in Our Divided Political Heart when you write that Americans are more frustrated and more fearful than they need to be. Those are powerful triggers for the kind of anger we see today.
I always love to quote that great Winston Churchill line, that Americans always do the right thing after first exhausting all of the other possibilities. And so we've been here before. We've gone through really difficult periods. We've made mistakes as a country before. I mean, we had slavery, and we got rid of it. And we've made a lot of improvements in our life. In the book, I quote Tocqueville. One of the things that great French observer of us back in the 19th century liked best about us was that he really valued our capacity for self-correction. And I think within this traditional American balance between individualism and community lies a path forward that could get us out of this particularly difficult time. So my book starts by talking about fear of American decline, which I think is something that's underlay our politics for about a decade now. But it's not a declinist book, because I think that we have both within the American idea itself, which I see as this idea of balance, and within ourselves, we have the capacity to move out of this period. And so I am very hopeful in the long run, and I hope we can make the difficult short run as short as possible.
Are you going into this election year's heating up optimistic or pessimistic about what's going to happen in this nation?
I'm optimistic about the nation and worried about the conduct of the election. I think this election threatens to be particularly vicious. And one reason it does is because of all the unaccountable money we're going to have out there.
From the summer of 2012, that's Washington Post columnist and Brookings Institute senior fellow E.J. Dionne. E.J. was with us to discuss this book, just as timely now as it was then. Our Divided Political Heart, The Battle for the American Idea in an Age of Discontent.